but by other people from the so-called Samadhi book, Mahanidhi. Jagadish Pandit was the savior of the world. He was a monsoon cloud of Krishna prema, pouring showers of mercy upon everyone. The quote from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Jagadish Pandit and his brother Mahesh lived near Jagannath Mishra in Sridham Mayapur. One Akadasi day, baby Nimai was crying constantly. He stopped after taking Mahaprasadam rice in Jagadish Pandit's home. Then Nimai performed a miracle. Jagadish Pandit swooned in ecstasy upon seeing baby Gauranga manifest a beautiful form with a monsoon cloud blue complexion, shining like lightning and adorned with a shimmering peacock feather. After moving to Sri Kshetra Dham, Jagannath Puri, Lord Gaurachandra asked Jagadish to come help spread the Harinam Sankirtan movement. Taking Lord Jagannath's permission, Jagadish Pandit took a deity of Jagannath back to Nadia to worship in his village of Yashora. In Krishna's Nitya Lila, Jagadish Pandit serves as the dancer Chandrahasa, or a Nagapatni, wife of Kaliya. That's Kaliya the serpent. Shri Jagadish Pandit Ki Jai. Jagadguru Shri Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Canto 10, Chapter 58, Text 13 to 19. So how to do this? I think what I'll do is there's one text in particular that has a substantial purport, more substantial purport than the others, and text 16. So I'll just read through the whole thing, and then we'll chant together text 16. Is that okay? Can we do like that? No. So text 13 and 14 are combined. Ekadaratam aruya. I guess we chant in unison. Jayo vanarad vacham dandivam danur adaya punau chakshayar chayakal chatam kishnena sannadho vihartum vikinam mahat bahu vyala mrigatinam pratishat paraviraham. Translation and short purport by Srila Prabhupada, by the BBT team. Once Arjuna, the slayer of powerful enemies, donned his armor, mounted his chariot, flying the flag of Hanuman, took up his bow and his two inexhaustible quivers, and went to sport with Lord Krishna in a large forest filled with fierce animals. Purport, this incident must have taken place after the burning of the Kandava forest, since Arjuna was now using the Gandiva bow and other weapons he had acquired during that incident. Next verse, 15. Tatra vidyacharayar vyagran sukaran mahisan ruvun sarabhan gavayan kadran harinam sasrasalakan. The Sanskrit was described as these set of verses as being very poetic Sanskrit. Translation, with his arrows, Arjuna shot tigers, boars, and buffalo in that forest, along with rus, sarabhas, gavayas, rhinoceroses, black deer, rabbits, and porcupines. just something that comes to mind. In different places in the Bhagavatam, we have lists of different natural items, flora and fauna, and animals and plants. And it's always very interesting how the lists combine Sanskrit names and then the translations in the same list. I guess when there's no English equivalent, like we hear about an eagle called a siena, and there's no English equivalent for that giant eagle. I think when the environment of Gajendra the elephant is described, and the very Chikuti mountains, it describes the place where even the demigods sport, and then there's that's one example where there's a lot of description of different kinds of birds and plants, and some of them are given in English and some in Sanskrit. All right, text 16. We'll read it as we're doing the others, and then we'll come back to it again. Tannan yu kinkararagye mejan parvan yupadate pritparita parishranto vibhatsur yamunam agat. Translation, a crew of servants carried to King Yudhisthira the slain animals fit to be offered in sacrifice on some special occasion. Then, feeling thirsty and tired, Arjuna went to the bank of the Yamuna. We'll come back and I'll read the purport when we come back to it. We'll just finish the group of texts that I was assigned to cover. Tatropaspisya vishadam tipavari maharatao vishnau dadarshitu kanyam charintam charudarshanam. After the two Krishnas bathed there, they drank the river's clear water. The great warriors then saw an attractive young girl walking nearby. Text 18. Tam asadya vararoham sudvijam ruchirananam papicha preshita shakya valguna pramadodatam. Translation and very short purport. Sent by his friend, Arjuna approached the exceptional young woman who possessed beautiful hips, fine teeth, and a lovely face, and inquired from her as follows. Purport. Krishna wanted Arjuna to see the deep devotion of this girl, and thus he urged him to make the initial inquiries. Last text. Tatvam kasyasi su soni kuto vahim chikir shashi manye tvam patim ichchantim sarvam katya sobani. Translation, Arjuna said, who are you, O fine, wasted lady? Doesn't mean the lady was wasted. She just had a proper size waist or something. Whose daughter are you, and where do you come from? What are you doing here? I think you must be looking for a husband. Please explain everything, O beautiful one. Arjuna is not really beating around the bush. So what will happen? I have to wait till tomorrow to find out. Stay tuned. We don't have much time, so with your permission, I'll just reread the Sanskrit itself without the responsive reading. Is that okay? Again, tannanyu kinkara rage, text 16, medyam parvan yupagate, trit parita parishanto, vibhatsu yamunam agat. Tan means them, mean you carry, kinkara servants, rage to the king, medyam fit to be offered in sacrifice, parvani a special occasion, upagate approaching, trit by thirst. Parita, overcome. Parishanta, fatigue. Vibhatsu, Arjunam, Yamunam, to the Yamuna River, Agat, went. Translation, a crew of servants carried to King Yudhisthira the slain animals, fit to be offered in sacrifice on some special occasion. Then, feeling thirsty and tired, Arjuna went to the bank of the Yamuna. Purport. As Srila Prabhupada often explained, the kshatriyas or warriors would hunt in the forest for several purposes: to practice their fighting skills, to control the population of ferocious beasts who were a threat to human beings, and to provide animals for Vedic sacrifices. The killed animals would be given new bodies by the power of the sacrifices. Since priests no longer have that power, the sacrifices would now constitute mere killing, thus forbidden. In other words, if we tried to imitate that Vedic procedure, the tendency would be just very sinful and mundane. In the fourth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we find that the great sage Narada severely chastised King Prachini Bodhisat for abusing this principle of authorized hunting. In fact, the king had become like modern sportsmen who cruelly kill animals as a so-called hobby. It's a little insight into how King Prachini Bodhisat, although a great soul, fell victim to abusing the Vedic facilities that are given in this case to the Kshatriya to go and hunt. Remember, his wife became very disturbed by his whimsical, exaggerated hunting that he did and went out during the night. Om Janakim Dandasya Janandana Shalakya Satsang Nishandana Tarsmai Shri Gurve Namaha. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So I often have this style of giving class where you'll see me, instead of like speaking, I'm reading. It kind of goes in and out from reading to more spontaneous speaking. That keeps things moving at pace, because I notice I'm trying to overcome a problem that I've had in the past of running out of time. So this helps me keep the pace. I don't think you'll mind. When I'm reading something that's not my own writing, then I'll let you know I'm quoting from this or from that. So I was thinking of starting off an introduction to my little presentation of with a disclaimer, saying that, well, because there's so many different pastimes, they're so fast moving, don't expect the class to be cohesive. Don't expect it to be like an integration of the whole thing. It's, you know, it's too much to expect of me. After all, just like the very, very uncultured people, they're very attracted to hear about sex and violence, more cultured people, romance and chivalry. and at least on that level, we can say it's there in the Vedic scriptures, including the Mahabharata, of course. And here we're having it here. We have violence, you're going out and killing all these different kinds of animals, and romance seems to be coming up, some conjugal incident. Or with Kalindi. And I was going to leave it at that. But actually, when I thought about it again, it occurred to me that there's a very cohesive common theme for all this called yajna, sacrifice. May seem superficially like completely different departments. On one hand, you have a sacrifice of a kshatriya's hunting, and they're going to give the dead animals to the brahmanas to offer in sacrifice. And so that's yajna, that's a type of yajna. Two aspects, one of varnashram yajna, the yajna of fulfilling one's prescribed duties, and the other is the brahmanas themselves will perform the Vedic rituals to offer the slain animals. And then you have, what does it have to do with Kalindi? Well, that's also yajna. Of course, I have to jump ahead a little bit. Tomorrow we'll hear how Kalindi, she is also performing yajna. She's performing, in Bhagavad Gita, so many kinds of yajnas are described. Dravya Jadyas, Tapo Jadya, Yoga Jadyas, Tata Pare, Sabhaya Jnana Jadyas Cha, Tataya Sankhita Vrataha. So she was doing a tapa jagya of great austerities. Yataya samshita vrataha, and she's taken a great vow. She'll explain that, so I won't jump the gun. We'll hear about that tomorrow. So she was also performing jagya. Of course, jagyas differ in a more fundamental and more profound categorization of jagyas. What's the purpose of it? In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says it's best when the purpose is transcendental knowledge. Every time we hear this word knowledge, it took me a long time to realize Srila Prabhupada's not talking about what's the first point in the aims in Bhakti Sastri, recall, memory, and, you know, or not even understanding exactly, but rather consciousness. Afterwards, someone could correct me if I'm wrong, but Prabhupada is talking about consciousness. He would call his disciples very often my students. But it's knowledge, but the knowledge means a paradigm shift, a change of consciousness. And that's what jagya is all about in the broad sense of the term. So the ideal in the Bhagavad Gita is jagya terminates in knowledge, and there are so many types of jagyas, austerities, and study of the Vedas, and there's so many kinds of yoga, but in general, yoga is also in the list of different types of jagyas. And jagya is, okay, let me resort to my notes now, so I won't digress and lose the pace. So we find a first point, which, okay, this is a distinct point that I can't tie in with the general theme of jagya, but it's just a stylistic point, we can say. We find a mini instance of the Bhagavatam's non-chronological structure. The purport to our first verse points to clear evidence that although the burning of the Kandava forest is described after these incidents, in other words, later in this chapter, you'll hear, nonetheless, the burning pastime must have actually occurred earlier. After all, Arjuna is described as carrying the same weapons, wearing the same armor, etc., that he acquired from Agni as a result of facilitating that ladder's devouring the Kandava forest. And then here's a quote from text 26. In the same chapter, Lord Agni presented Arjuna with a bow, a set of white horses, a chariot, a pair of inexhaustible quivers, and armor that no fighter could pierce with weapons. So various of these items are described. We've already heard that in this series of verses, that Arjuna had acquired from Agni as a reward for facilitating Agni's devouring the Kandava forest. Agni is fire, fire god, fire, so he burned up, burning from our point of view, dinner from his point of view, the whole Kandava forest. And of course there are many other aspects to that incident. But it's described first that Arjuna was wearing, so in other words, it's not chronological. And then to confirm that, in the purport to the previous text, to the one I just cited, this would be text 25, it confirms the real sequence of events by citing Srila Jiva Goswami. Quote, Srila Jiva Goswami explains the sequence of events that occurred during Lord Krishna's stay with the Pandavas. He states that first the Kandava forest was burned, then Kalindi was found, then the city was constructed, that would be Intraprastha, maybe, and then the assembly hall was presented to the Pandavas. Even we heard about incident in Intraprastha in that city, so it's not chronological. Okay, now, the purport to the 16th verse will be the main focus of this morning's class. It allows us to discuss something about Vedic sacrifices, their general purpose, and also some secondary purposes. More specifically, we are here dealing with animal killing, a practice we find rather troubling. How does that fit in with the Vedic scheme, with the ultimate purpose of human life, and with devotional service? We did just hear, verse 15, the list of species of animals that were shot and killed by the arrows of Arjuna. Why such violence? How did King Prachinibahishat, quote, abuse the principle of authorized hunting? We can, referring to lessons from Guru and Shastra, address these issues. Okay, so the first point is that the performance, and more specifically, the primary purpose of yajna, Srila Prabhupada makes the following statement. The prosperity of the world depends not on our own efforts, but on the background arrangement of the Supreme Lord directly carried out by the demigods. In other words, even for material necessities such as rain, sacrifice is the key factor. So the first, before we go into the specific incident of the yajnas described, especially the kshatriya, hunting activity, and then how the brahmanas will accept those dead animals to offer and sacrifice. First we have to realize that we're hearing all these announcements about sankirtan. Of course, that's the prescribed yajna for this age, Kali Yuga. So yajna, nayam lakostya yajnasya kutonya kutushatama. Without performing sacrifice, one cannot be happy, either in this world or in this life. What to speak of the next. So yajna is the human method of making progress, both materially and ultimately spiritually. In chapter 3, there's a lot of information Krishna gives. You are happy by the sacrifice, and will bestow upon you all desirable things, both being happy in this world and also for achieving liberation. Of course, yajna is ultimately for the yajnartha, for the bhoktaram yajnata, for the true enjoyer, the supreme enjoyer. The ultimate issue, the only enjoyer, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the only direct enjoyer, we can say. In fact, Krishna appears in Canto 4, at the beginning it's described that one of the incarnations of the Lord, one of the yuga avatars is called, he appears as an incarnation called yajna. Now, Burijan Prabhu writes the following in Surrender Unto Me, his commentary on Bhagavad Gita, as it is. One's position in the modes of material nature dictates his tendency and ability to perform sacrifice. This is from Burijan Prabhu's writing. One person influenced by the modes of material nature and his impressions from previous life chooses to perform a sacrifice of breath control. This is like in chapter 4, there are descriptions of so many varieties of sacrifices. Another performs sacrifice through yajnas, through the actual rituals. Yet another sacrifices material wealth. Superficially, these sacrifices appear different. Although born of varieties of consciousness, they lead to the same goal. That goal, transcendental knowledge, brings freedom from material life. Human life is meant for advancing in spiritual life, and the process of advancing is sacrifice or yajna. A man works and achieves results as the fruits of his work, and should offer at least some of those results in sacrifice to Vishnu. One who makes no offering, money, ability, intelligence, mind, or body, simply lives selfishly in vain, for he has not advanced towards the supreme objective, Krishna. And then Burijan Prabhu goes on in the purport to 3.16 that Ivam Prabhatitam Satam Nanu Vartayati Haya Adayori Dharamo Molda Parkasavivati. He goes on and gives a lengthy description of how the yoga ladder, not in terms of Ashtanga yoga, but in the whole Vedic program for the human form of life, how through many lifetimes even, one gradually advances from fruitive activity and to knowledge, to karma, mishra bhakti, to karma yoga, we can say, up to pure devotional service in the ultimate issue. Ashtanga yoga is also mentioned. Now, regarding that supreme objective, Bhurijan Prabhu also writes in his commentary, Bhagavad Gita 3.15, in other words, Indra's power to provide rain is supplied by the personality of Godhead. This understanding gradually blossoms into the realization that Vishnu is the only true object of worship. Bhagavad Gita, Mayaiva Vihitan Vitan, it's in the... Seventh chapter. Mayaiva Vihitan. The demigods seem to be the ones who are providing all these benefits, but actually they're really only coming from me. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, we think the rain is coming from Indra, but actually it's really Krishna. And when Krishna got the name, they gave him the name, you're the real Indra. After the lifting of the Govardhan Hill, Tapam Yaham Aham Varsham Yigdinam Usinam Ucha, in chapter 9 of Bhagavad Gita, text 19, Krishna explains that it's I who send forth and withhold the rain. Really? So this is a little insight into how by performing yajnas to the demigods, one will gradually wake up to the fact that actually it's Krishna who's providing the benefits. And as it says in Bhagavad Gita, yo-yo yam-yam tanum bhakta shraddha yarchitam ishtati tasyam tasyachalam shradam kamiva vidyanyaham, that Krishna says that those who want to worship a particular demigod, I make their faith steady so they can devote themselves to that particular being. So everything's coming from Krishna. Now, yajna is sometimes referred to as Dharma Setu. And this setu, or bridge, is meant for crossing over the ocean of nations. The bridge between the relative world and the transcendental world. In other words, you're crossing over the ocean. And so you can picture a bridge. The bridge may be resting on one bank and then ultimately on the bank which you want to get to. Crossing over the ocean, the Vaitarani River, we can say, or the Raja River, crossing over. So when we're starting off, naturally, yajna will be materialistically motivated. We haven't changed our paradigm yet. We're still looking for enjoying the senses of this material world. So we'll perform yajna to try to get those things. But if we continue the process of yajna, not when I say we, I don't mean in Kali Yuga, and I don't mean ourselves. We are very fortunate to be involved in different capacities in sankirtan yajna. But in the Vedic scheme, this was the agenda, to cross that bridge, that setu, from the material energy to the spiritual energy. To change, that was coming up in a few days ago in class here, the idea of change, Madan Mohan Prabhu was giving to us, change the energy that we're being controlled by. It sounds technical, but it's very fundamental, actually. And just like when I joined the movement, finally, in Boston in 1975, I asked the devotees, what is Hare Krishna mantra? I was told it means, oh Lord, oh energy of the Lord, please engage me in your service. And I said to them, but I'm tired of serving Maya, the energy. I want to serve Krishna, I don't want to serve the energy. And then the devotees explained the nuance there. No, it's the superior energy, ultimately Srimati Radharani. It's not, the energy is okay. It doesn't mean what shakti is exactly. But the energy is okay to serve that energy, the internal energy, and serve with the internal energy, the energetic Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. So this process of jagya is like a bridge where we're crossing over, resting in the material energy, and then by crossing that bridge, even if it's over many lifetimes, then one finds himself a Mahatma. One is now resting in the transcendence. So in Vedanta philosophy, regular conduct of life means the religious rites prescribed in the Vedas. This is actually a quote from a very interesting book called Substance and Shadow by Savitri Swami. Now, next point is regarding how jagya grants concessions to the materialistic general populace. This cannot be denied. To bring home this point, and how our Krishna conscious movement, we can't hate these concessions. We can't reject them. We can't. It doesn't mean we take advantage of them, but we can't deny them. There's a very interesting discussion between Srila Prabhupada and one Indian gentleman, perhaps a life member, where the Indian gentleman was insisting that even if the Vedas say that you can kill animals and eat, I will never eat meat, I will never kill any animal, I think, but that's okay. I mean, I could be very nice that he doesn't ever eat meat, even though the Vedas condone it. But he was taking it too far. He was actually rejecting the Vedas. That was Dr. Patel? Was in that mindset? Very interesting. I didn't know this thing. He had wonderful discussions with Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada said, that is Buddhism. That is Buddhism. You're the Buddhist. Why is he Buddhist? Because he's rejecting the Vedas. To protect the animals, that's very nice. But that's limited. Time and circumstances, that is. What is that called? Naimaitika dharma? It's a dharma according to Jiva dharma. It's a dharma according to time and circumstance. Not really the Jiva dharma or the Nitya dharma, the Sanatana dharma. So that's the distinction. It's not that we're not satisfied being strict vegetarians, and because the Vedas give concessions, then it's our duty to eat some meat. No, not at all. And kill animals. No. But we can't deny that the Vedas need to do that. The people want these things. In human society, as Prabhupada explained, there's always a tendency towards meat eating, sex life, sex intoxication, gambling. There's always these tendencies are there. So the Vedas accommodate these things, not to encourage these sinful activities, but they sanctify these activities and at least reduce the sinful action or remove the sinful reaction completely by this process of jagya. And here's an example. Sri Chamasa Muni, I may beg an extra 5 minutes of time, but if someone needs to leave exactly at 9 o'clock, there's no offense, you can leave, but I may go just a few minutes later. I'm sorry. won't be too bad. Chamasa Muni, to King Nimi, I think in the background it's Narada Muni describing to Yudhisthira Maharaj in the 11th canto, 5th chapter, 11th verse, quote, in this material world, the conditioned soul is always inclined to sex, meat eating, and intoxication. Therefore, religious scriptures never actually encourage such activities. Although the scriptural injunctions provide for sex through sacred marriage, for meat eating through sacrificial offerings, and for intoxication through the acceptance of ritual cups of wine, such ceremonies are meant for the ultimate purpose of renunciation. I was brought up well, nominally Jewish background, but my parents were basically atheists. But still, culturally, I heard the language. It's called Yiddish in the house, and they sent me to get a samskara, which is called bar mitzvah. And before I got bar mitzvah, I had to go to Hebrew school, and they had something in the basement called junior congregation. And after the service, the religious service, then we would line up, and they would, even though we were children, they would give us wine. Children's wine, but not without alcohol. It had alcohol. And then we left very happy. Happy kids. So even for children, they're giving us. And wine is like a big deal in Judaism. Lots of wine. The word they have for it is called schnapps or something like that. So the idea is to sanctify one's action, which, if not at least indirectly offered to the Lord, would certainly carry sinful reaction. Here's a quote. Meat-eating through sacrificial offerings, oh yeah, I just quoted from the verse. Meat-eating through sacrificial offerings, quote unquote, even pertains to the off-mentioned procedures for slaughtering a lower animal, such as the goat. We don't hear about the carnivore, in other words, the meat eater actually killing. He kills, but the word we usually hear is he's sacrificing the animal. Now, this isn't just some play of words, some word jugglery. If he's doing it, it's not a very high-class sacrifice, but it's actually a sacrifice, and he has to go. What are the features? It has to be a dark moon night. It has to be such and such a time at the night. It has to be not just any animal. It has to be a lower animal, such as a goat. And the worst part of it, or the best part of it, depends how you look at it, is he has to whisper in the goat's ear, the next time around, I'll be the goat, and you'll kill me. And he has to do all these things just to get the pleasure of chewing on the dead body of the goat. And then the word we have in Sanskrit is mamsha. And how would you translate that? The mamsha is so then you become me, I become you. Just like we see devotees sometimes wearing that t-shirt, that karma t-shirt, which shows the cow has a human face and is about to get its head cut off, I'm sorry to mention. And then the human has a bull's face or a cow's face, and he's, because the roles are reversed. You see, even we may have heard about King Prachinibhatishat. Narada Muni warned him, and he had a vision of how at the time of death, all these animals that you cruelly slaughter excessively, they'll come back and torture you. Real lesson. I think Madari also got the warning from Narada Muni in the same area, same idea. Of course, this cannot be taken cheaply, as in the Temple of Kali sign at the entrance to an ordinary slaughterhouse. Sri Prabhupada mentioned that in India, of course, there was slaughterhouse. It was a plain, ordinary slaughterhouse, and all they did was they put a sign on the entrance saying Temple of Kali. To sanctify, it's a concession, but it can't be taken so cheaply, neither by the karmis or by the devotees. In case of the karmis, I've heard that there's a priest, I think it's called a chazan or something. There's a type of Jewish priest, a rabbi, that specializes in making the meat kosher and sanctifying the meat. And sometimes they get good money for it, and they just make some very perfunctory gesture, some ritual, and they're not really doing the job. It can't be taken cheaply. It has to be done properly. And then I've heard Sankirtan stories, not so nectarian as we heard this morning, but I've heard Sankirtan pastimes, if you can call it that. It wasn't really that great that in the name of maybe it can be excused because Sankirtan Chagya purifies everything. But devotees would be so much in a hurry, so much dedicated to getting out. And even I did it, you wouldn't believe it, but even I was out there 10, 12 hours a day in 1975, 76. It was a big wave of book distribution. And we didn't do it, but I heard some traveling Sankirtan parties, they would go to the big supermarket, and as they entered the supermarket, they would offer all the food in the supermarket. So that way they wouldn't have to take the time out to make an offering. That we have to be careful about. You can't cut corners to that extent, even for a Sankirtan Chaturvedi. So we have to be careful about that. At the end of the day, however, Nehayat Karma Dharmayat Nepidadaya Kalpate Natirta Padasevayai Jivan Api Vitopi Saha. This is a lesson we learned from Devahuti, the princess Devahuti. She's explaining that if one's ordinary work, karma, doesn't become religious activity, jagya or dharma, and then if one's ritualistic religious activity doesn't elevate to renunciation, vairagya, detachment, and then if one's dry renunciation doesn't elevate to tirtha pada sevayai, devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, tirtha pada, then one is considered dead, a dead person, even though breathing. So the key thing is one has to keep moving forward if one is following the Vedic process. And even in our own devotional service, we may be at different stages, karma, mishra, bhakti, but we have to become nishkama. We have to become without any mixture of karma or jnana. So karma should elevate to dharma, like in Varnashram Dharma, as in Varnashram Dharma. In this verse, in purport, we are given an instance of this, and one involving the two Krishnas. Who are the two Krishnas? Krishna and Arjuna. Arjuna's name is also Krishna. And we heard about the third Krishna, but that's Krishna. And who is that? Draupadi. Yes, you're very attentive to the classes. So Draupadi is also Krishna. The feminine form of Krishna is the long A, I think, so it's Krishna. So here we're hearing about the two Krishnas. They're also performing like Varnashram Jagya, the sacrifice of properly performing one's prescribed duties. The consumption of the killed animals is not included in the list of purposes of such Kshatriya violence, you know. It doesn't say that one of the purposes that the Kshatriya is slaughtering animals, is slaying animals, is so you can have a nice meat dinner afterwards. That's not his purpose. The list we heard included other things, much more sublime. But how are these purposes met? On the one hand, some of the animal species mentioned in that list of animals, we even heard shashi rabbits and porcupines. And porcupines could be a little, as we say, dicey. I mean, you don't want to, but they're not really threatening. They're not life-threatening. What to speak of rabbits? So some of the species mentioned were not at all threatening to humans, so the purpose of protecting against dangerous animals is not applicable in that killing. Furthermore, the function or purpose of testing the mantras may seem not so relevant here. Why am I yet saying that? Because how can these animals, quote, be given new bodies by the power of the sacrifices if they were first killed? We're hearing that they were killed by Arjuna. I don't know Krishna directly, but Krishna was approving. He was with Arjuna. Arjuna was killing these animals, even rabbits. And there's a story in the ninth canto, was it? There was this one personality who killed a rabbit and was meant for offering, and he ate it, and that accrued great sinful reaction. But it's there in the Bhagavatam. So how would they get new bodies if they were first killed? Doesn't one start the process of reincarnation right away? And how does that work? It would seem that they already almost automatically be given new bodies by the law of transmigration of the soul. How would this work? Now, because right now it's 9 o'clock, so I was going to ask for contributions. It's kind of a detailed thing. Let's call this, in Bhakti Shastri teaching, we call this car park. It's a car park question. In other words, it's a homework assignment. If somebody, not that you're my students, but if somebody could come up with an answer to that. Maybe you already have an answer, but hold your fire, because I just want to wrap up here. In this regard, Srila Prabhupada has given us a frank explanation of this mantra testing function. I'll quote from class on Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2, Text 10. Now, because it is 9 o'clock, of course, I don't think any of you will be inhibited, but if someone feels squeamish about offering of pranams or obeisances and leaving, feel free to do so. There's no offense. Those who would be willing to stay for a few minutes, I appreciate that very much. This is not going to drag on. Quote, formerly the brahmanas were so expert that my mantra, they ignite fire, and they would test. Putting one animal in the fire, they would take and make it again alive. This is the test of the mantra. By mantra, an animal is put in the fire, comes out again with rejuvenated life. People think that Gomedha Jagya, Ashwamedha Jagya, are made for killing the animal. No, it was testing the mantra of the Vedas, whether actually being pronounced. That was the test. Just like in biological laboratory, the medical practitioner, they test with animals to observe the physiological and anatomical conditions. Similarly, but they cannot give life, they simply kill. But here in the Vedic Jagya, the animal was put in the fire and it was again taken alive. Because such Jagyic Brahmana is not there in this Kali Yuga, therefore all the Jagyas are forbidden. That's why it's described, there are five things forbidden in Kali Yuga. Sacrifice of a cow is mentioned, the sacrifice of a horse, Ashwamedha. These Vedic Jagyas often involving animal sacrifice are forbidden in Kali Yuga. The idea that sometimes in Jewish culture, they think it's almost like a sacred duty to eat meat, to enjoy the meat or something. No, that's a concession for those that are fallen and have to eat meat. Then there's some way that you could take the bite out of the sinful reaction by performing the proper jagya. At least we can rest assured that the animal killing by Arjuna, accompanied, this is my own words, these are my own words, the animal killing by Arjuna accompanied by Lord Krishna, and for that matter, any authentic Vedic hunting or other kind of violent action is a far cry from hunting as a hobby, or even hunting for food, as in the case of Mrigari. Of course, in his case, it was worse. He was only half killing. All right, so wrap up means that I was trying to emphasize the theme of Jagya as a common theme encompassing all the set of verses. I even mentioned that you'll hear tomorrow, the next day, how even Kalindi, related to the river Yamuna, is also performing a very austere form of sacrifice. So sacrifice is everything in one sense. Thank you so much for your kind attention, and you can all take off immediately, or if a few of you have any question or comment, if you'd like to get involved with it. I know it's very late.
That sacrifice is not recommended in Kali Yuga, according to that. In the verse, Kateya Gaya told Vishnu that Tritayam Jagatomakai, that sacrifice is recommended in Treta Yuga, no?
Right.
Is that referred to a particular kind of sacrifice? Because we also have the verse that Jagnai Santi Kamakaya, you think Kali Yuga, we have also a sacrifice.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that all sacrifice is only for Treta Yuga and not for Kali Yuga. It just means Vedic Jagyas, isn't it? Vedic Jagyas, the traditional Vedic Jagyas, as a means for elevation. they were feasible in Treta Yuga, but in Kali Yuga it's not only unfeasible, but it's even forbidden. That doesn't mean that the principle of Jagya is universal. You can't get away from Jagya. Described that a pure devotee in Bhagavad Gita, he says every one of his acts is technically Jagya. Every one of his acts is actually, at the end of the day, is actually sacrifice. If one is that pure. So if we can't do Jagya 24/7, at least we could, as much in our day, as many hours as possible, we can Yatraoshi, that's everything we do to be offered to the Lord. He is the enjoyer. If you're really anxious to go, but you can go, you can go. Don't feel constrained. Any less, this will be.
In 7th canto, the famous verse, Kamad Deshad Bhayat Sneha Kata Bhakti Sharanam Avesha Tu Agam Hitta Bhagavato Gatim Gata. So this Avesha, Prabhupada says that Avesha was the prime, main reason that everybody had delivered or can get out from the material existence. So when Arjuna was killing, according to Dasamiti Puni of Sanatana Goswami, those animals, they are so fortunate that they were forced to look at Krishna as they were departing from this world. And this absorption immediately liberated him. Now Prabhupada gives also in 3rd canto, 2nd chapter, that when Sudarshan Chakra or somebody is killed by Krishna, by any means, here Arjuna is killing with Krishna, then Prabhupada says, like, person like Shishupal, they did not appreciate or glorify, so they went to merge. But though after the subtle body dissolved, they have a privilege to see the beauty of Krishna. And if they start appreciating, then they go to Vaikuntha.
Yeah, this is a little more elevated topic, not surprising coming from you. But the idea of Avesha is there. It says, Navena Syat, not Vena, not King Vena. He didn't have any Avesha, he didn't have any absorption in Krishna. He was just a pure atheist. He thought he was God, and he didn't think of Krishna at all. Whereas Kamsa was always thinking of the form of Krishna. Shishupal was always thinking of Krishna out of envy. Kamsa out of fear. Even Gopi, it's all put in the same, not that it's a level playing field, but it's all put in the same category of Avesha. They all receive the mercy of the Lord. Somewhat different ways, but they all receive the mercy of the Lord. But King Vena didn't. Now what I was describing, and the more, little more pertinent to this group of texts, in the Vedic system, that Avesha would come very gradually. Through good association, then one becomes, at the beginning, one is Avesha, he's absorbed in sense gratification or material happiness, and that's his goal.
Maharaj, Avesha comes from a conscious choice of individual devotee or person. Avesha requires conscious choice. It's not, it can be forced. Like in the morning walk, Prabhupada was asking LA that every day the devotees are chanting on this path, and what happened to the grass that they're stepping on. And sometimes the grass also hearing, or what is the result? Srila Prabhupada said, they immediately take a human form. So you can go on, like Devakala Maharaj was reading from Glory of Ganga Devi, Mother Ganges. He said there was a snake that Garuda picked up in Mayapur. And the snake, seeing the Garuda's face, was so absorbed. Even though he's a creature, he's not consciously, but by force, that he will be killed by or eaten by this Garuda.
No, we get mercy. We get mercy. Madhivana, Madhikeha, Padra. I mean, Lord Chaitanya is giving mercy to those who are not even looking for it. What to speak of, not even deserving it. So there's no question. There's something, in one sense, the mercy is imposed. It's like, it's just almost automatic. But at the same time, this idea of Avesha, Prabhupada named this movement the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So it's a cultivation. You get mercy, and that can help your consciousness. But the idea is we have to be, what we say in modern American English, we say proactive to actually change our consciousness. That means change what we're taking shelter of, so that we will naturally always be remembering Krishna all the time. I better stop now. Thank you so much for your kind attention. Jagadguru, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Granthavad Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Jagadish Pandit ki jai. Jagadguru, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.